analogy I kind of use is like government sometimes has this problem of there's a light bulb on the ceiling and you have to somehow replace that light without the light ever going out. Like these things, you can't turn the light off, but you have to replace the light.
Hello, and thank you for listening to the Public Impact Podcast, the only podcast that we know of bringing you the success and innovation stories that are happening all over the public sector. My name is Frank McNally, the Director of Learning and Content here at Public Spend Forum, and today's episode takes us back 3 years, almost to the month, to the rollout of healthcare.gov.
We're going to start with Obamacare, because everybody's freaking out. They should have used Squarespace, which is what I told them in the first place.
It's been a long time coming.
Yeah. The screen says, I'm sorry, our system is temporarily down.
Uh-oh. That's right, and six enrollments on day one. But
I don't know of anyone else who's gotten through.
Now, this might not strike you as a good news story, but trust me, it is, thanks in large part to our guest today.
My name is Rohan Bobe. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Nava Public Benefit Corporation.
Now, Rohan is a technologist, and like many other technologists around this time in October and November of 2013, he was minding his own business until he received a very important phone call.
My story in particular is I'd actually quit my previous job a couple months before I got the call, and it was a friend of mine, Lauren Yu, who I went to school with and had worked with in a previous job. And I was in the middle of planning my vacation, actually, something I was really looking forward to. And I saw the phone, which I had next to my computer, buzz. And I looked at it for a second, and I wasn't entirely sure I wanted to pick it up. Sorry, Lauren. But I was like, oh, I haven't talked to Lauren in a while. So I picked up, and long story short, he was like, have you heard of healthcare.gov? I was like, yeah, it's that thing on the news, right? One way or another, slowly I talked to more of the folks on the Marketplace Live team, got to know a little bit more about what they were trying to accomplish and how that differed from the initial rescue effort. And I was sold pretty quickly. It wasn't a hard decision for me at all. I never did decide where I wanted to go for vacation, but I still think about that, maybe for the next one.
Now, Rohan never did get that vacation, unless your idea of a vacation is spending 12 to 18 months in a McMansion in the Eastern Shore of Maryland writing code for the government. But nevertheless, it was quite a professional journey.
We built two products for healthcare.gov. So one of them was, as you said, App 2.0, the new health insurance application. So that's the flow that consumers will go through to apply for health insurance and get eligibility results that tell them here's what you're eligible for. For example, like, you know, this level of subsidies, eligibility for Medicaid, and the like. The other thing we worked on was the scalable login system, SLS, which is the new identity management system for healthcare.gov.
So Rohan and his team, which would come to be known as Marketplace Lite, built basically the new application system, the front end, so to speak, for healthcare.gov that failed so spectacularly on rollout. And I was fascinated by thinking about what this team must have encountered when they finally did start working. So I had to ask Rohan about what those first couple of days were like for the Marketplace Lite team.
When I think back about some of what our team advocated for during those times, we were a little bit naive in what we were pushing for, and I think that was okay. But the results of that naive pushing did result in the adoption of Amazon Web Services and cloud technologies in finding innovative ways to hook in the new health insurance application to hot swap a problematic identity management system for one that was on solid ground. All of those moves required us to sort of naively advocate for them in a certain sense, and for people in CMS to recognize that there was value in that, which they did. And I it, it was certainly a partnership. And I imagine if we weren't there, those same desires for improvement would have been there, but without the right partner across the table, it's possible that those larger underlying shifts may not have happened, but we would have seen more incremental progress.
Now, what I take away from that is just this notion of there being no overnight sensations or quick fixes in government technology. It's really just comes down to diligence and the naivete that Rohan and his team had about what they could and couldn't do actually probably kept them afloat and kept them optimistic at those early times. But it was also interesting to learn about what Rohan and his team were advocating for, and the answer to that is pretty great.
You know, our overarching goal as Marketplace Lite and now as Nava are to advocate for the sorts of practices that produce really great digital services, awesome user experiences, really cost-effective, scalable, secure, efficient software.
And that's super important, because when you can only change a few things at a time, it's important to understand really where your battles can be won so you can pick and choose.
I think we had to ask ourselves, what is truly important and what are the things worth advocating for? So the simple, maybe unsatisfying answer is we did both. There were cases where we were unaware that a barrier existed until we ran into it, and it wasn't up to us. It was a matter of policy. It was a matter of the operations of the agency, and you know, not all barriers need to necessarily be overcome. Sometimes they're there for a reason. But when we did carefully think about those things that we ran into, points of friction, you know, hard nose or hard resistance, and we tried to triage the things that would long-term enable the agency and the program, healthcare.gov, to move forward and adopt better technology with the goal of having a really great digital service. We were trying to separate the factors that really affected that from things where we either couldn't do anything about those or we ran into it just because we didn't really know it was there.
Now put yourself for a minute in the shoes of Rohan and his compadres at Marketplace Lite. Can you imagine the frustration? You're brought in to salvage the signature legislation of a presidential administration, yet you're getting pushback and friction. But Rohan doesn't express much frustration in his answer here. His patience is admirable. Also notable is his lack of hubris. Pay attention to how he describes the problem as being larger than technology and design, and recognizing that he and his team weren't the only experts in the room.
You typically encounter those points of resistance not because somebody just wants to say no to you, but because they're responding to a set of considerations that are probably not the same considerations that you're basing your opinions on. And this is not just a technology and design problem. And if we show up thinking, hey, like we're the best. We know how to do technology and design, and nobody else knows kind of how to do this right. That is an approach that is, one, just not true, because for the types of digital services we're talking about, there's a lot of dimensions beyond technology and design that have to be taken in. And if you don't have a background here, you don't know those things. So you have to find out how to collaborate with an agency, work in true partnership, and as long as the channels of communication stay open and the basis for discussion is grounded in what is best for the user, what is best for the agency, what is best for program integrity, all these dimensions that nobody would probably argue that are bad things to advocate for, as long as we stay on those foundations and the discussion is had on those terms, we think that even though we may disagree with a person or a department or a process or anything, we always try to frame our arguments through that lens, because that's why we're here, and that's why we're pushing for these things, is because we think, we are advocating for X because this is going to make the user experience better in this Y way.
And there's a really important nugget of truth in Rohan's comments here, and that's that resistance in the public sector isn't always just because somebody doesn't want to comply. There's policy implications. There's real reasons why things don't happen as quickly. And when you're developing digital services in the public sector, you're going to meet that resistance naturally. Government is not a business. And Rohan really nailed this and summarized it quite nicely when he was describing some of the differences. I'd brought up the show on television called Silicon Valley and was asking him if being in this McMansion in Eastern Maryland, coding with his cohort and his peers in Marketplace Light, was a little bit like this show. And his answer was enlightening, not just because of the vibe in that house, but the real differences between government technology, government digital services, and what private companies develop.
You know, in Silicon Valley, the show and in life, you oftentimes are building a product. You have the luxury of choosing your customers, of having nearly complete or totally complete control over your product and having creative control. We were in a much more collaborative environment from the beginning, serving users that, you know, we didn't get to sort of pick and choose, and not that we would want to. That's government's responsibility to serve those needs. And so there were certainly differences, and it quickly became clear that we could not be tone deaf, that this was not simply a technology or design problem, that we had to learn and teach ourselves, despite the fact that none of us had backgrounds in government policy, you know, how to talk about these things, how to think about these things. We could bring a perspective of how you quickly deliver working, reliable, scalable, secure software with a great user experience. That was our expertise that we brought, but we couldn't afford to ignore these dimensions that we had no experience in, but we had to factor into the process, things like policy, things like how to collaborate with government and understand the expertise that they've had for years about interpreting the Affordable Care Act and understanding how to translate a complicated piece of legislation into a working product. That translation, it's easy to kind of bash that process as something that often goes wrong, but it's really complex, and it's something that we brought our set of, you know, experiences and expertise to, but we quickly recognized that it wasn't going to be just as simple as kind of building a consumer product.
And here I do have to emphasize Rohan and his team's appreciation and respect for the government mission. I mean, we've heard some complaints about the hubris of technologists who swoop into organizations and expect to solve everything right away. Rohan and his team at Marketplace Light didn't seem to embody these characteristics. And as a result, they were able to notch some early wins, like deploying their code into a modern cloud infrastructure.
We were very iterative in how we actually developed App 2.0. So very small changes and units of functionality that could be covered by automated testing very easily. You know, once you deployed those changes, you were able to quickly verify that all the sets of things that you expected were actually functioning as you expected them to. So to the issue of scope, one of the things that I think made App 2 successful was advocating for building this new service on cloud infrastructure that was not the same infrastructure that was used for the rest of the site. So that was something that took time to convince CMS that was something that was, that should be done while still being compliant with all of the things that government systems have to achieve when they consider security. So that ultimately, that was, even though that took some time, that did pay off because we were able to take advantage of a lot of features of cloud infrastructure that made us highly fault tolerant, highly reliable, able to absorb load, take load off of other parts of the system. So just by having App 2.0 out there in production, you're taking load away from systems that are less able to scale and respond to serve that live traffic.
If I could interject,
sure.
In this particular injection, I was trying to ask Rohan a technical question in a very non-technical way, but an attempt to understand exactly what App 2.0 and the SLS were effectively doing for healthcare.gov proper.
To some extent,
the other parts of the system could were able to do less things. It's, I think it's as simple as that. We took on a 65%, as you say in the beginning, 65% of consumers when they were applying for insurance, and by taking that load onto cloud infrastructure, that was load that was not sort of equivalently present on the other systems.
So Rohan and its teammates at Marketplace Lite are building cloud-enabled infrastructures. They're taking load off the rest of healthcare.gov. But I'm still very curious at this point in our interview to learn more about how Rohan was dealing with the abundance of people, the influx of people attempting to sign up for healthcare.gov. And his comments in this particular segment are really interesting because they again illustrate one of the primary differences between government digital services and digital services in the private sector.
In building software, there's a common rule called 80-20. So sort of taking a clear prioritization approach to trying to find some of the core insights, the core pieces of functionality that you want to build first. You don't want to kind of just jump in and build this huge application that maybe is not solving the needs of the users that you're intending it to. Now, sort of put that to one side, and on another side, government has unique responsibilities to serve very diverse, broad populations. You don't want your government 80-20ing your way through, you know, populations and saying, oh, like, you know, that minority population is really just not that large. So, you know, let's deprioritize that and focus on building for the common case. We found that when you look closer at that problem, there are absolutely places where we call it finding the seam. So you have this complex, what can seem like a monolithic kind of problem that's a combination of, you know, technology considerations, design, policy, business requirements. It's complicated. So where do you find the seams to pick apart these problems such that you're not dropping the ball on government's responsibilities and, you know, potentially doing something undesirable like 80-20ing out people that should receive just as much consideration as anybody else in perhaps smaller populations or things that would be easy to kind of factor out in a normal ruthless prioritization software approach. And you also want to move fast and not say, okay, we're going to build everything and in a year we're going to have a working system and it'll address everybody's needs. So where do you find that seam?
Finding the seam is such a cool concept. So I wondered, where was the seam on App 2.0?
We did target a common case of consumers, but we did it in such a way that was very sensitive to making the common case easy, but making sure that everybody else was served just as well and that we weren't dropping our responsibilities and government's responsibilities to serve everybody. You know, it's the type of thing that it's the type of problem you have to get close to before you can find those solutions. You have to spend time with it. You have to play with it, kind of turn it from side to side and look at it from different angles. And that's how you're able to rectify those seemingly irreconcilable things where you don't want to do everything and you don't want to do something too narrow either.
Rohan and his team didn't do something narrow, quite the contrary. In fact, he wouldn't brag that much about what he and Marketplace Lite did, so I have to do it for him. In a year and a half, the dynamic products that Rohan and his team created accomplished the following. App 2.0, compared to the original system that was doing the same function, completed transactions in 9 minutes versus the original application, which took about 20 minutes to complete. The previous app, the one that App 2.0 replaced, required 76 page clips. Their app, App 2.0, required 16. 85% of users were able to complete App 2.0 from start to finish versus only 5% in prior systems. Now, in the SLS design, Marketplace Lite reduced response time from 10 seconds, which is literally an eternity in internet wait time, to about 30 milliseconds, and it was all done at an incredible savings. The original SLS system cost $250 million to build and would have cost $70 million annually to maintain. MPL built something that was not only better, but far, far cheaper. $4 million to build, $1 million per year to maintain. See, I told you this is going to be a happy story. So after hearing all about what Rohan and his fellow technologists at Marketplace Lite did to support the rollout and eventually stabilization of healthcare.gov, I was curious what they were doing now.
To summarize our time as the Marketplace Lite team, I think it was more a shift in mentality more than anything else. As MPL ramped down, we went through a process of really introspecting and soul searching on what our next moves were going to be, because there was a possibility at that time that we could have said, you know, we think we did a good job, or the service is better than we found it, and now we can go back to, you know, minding our own business in California or New York or where people had sort of come from. But the important elements of our motivation convinced us that we can be part of a larger shift towards an empathetic, user-centered approach to design and development. And having now had 2 years of experience figuring out, how do you not just do that in the private sector, how do you do that in the public sector? That experience felt too, we couldn't walk away from that. We couldn't throw that away. So that was really, that process of introspecting and coming to that conclusion was really the seeds for Nava.
And it led them to consider some really basic questions. I mean, sure, in the short and medium term, reimagining critical digital services and improving the user experience, it's all well and good. But in the long run, and Rohan acknowledged this is quite a long run indeed, but deeper than the surface level of digital services that are just simply usable, right? That's kind of a low bar for the public sector. They're attempting to raise the bar in the long term, and they're doing that in a really neat way.
We imagine a world in which we sort of flip it inside out, where the services, rather than reflecting the organizational structure of government that produces these programs and produces these services, we flip that inside out to have the user's perspective be kind of the primary design principle that's guiding how, you know, what information is collected, how is it collected, how is it shared, how is it verified, and to keep the user fully aware of what's happening.
The notion of elevating digital services so that they're designed with the user in mind reminds me a little bit of Conway's Law, which states that organizations which design systems are constrained to produce designs that are copies of the communication structures of those systems. So think about healthcare.gov and its 55 contractors and multitude of technocrats and bureaucrats inside the government. Its complexity is mind-boggling, and in retrospect, probably not surprising that the whole thing ultimately nearly failed and required this wave of technologists to come in and fix it. That's not an implication of government. That's just an understanding that government systems by design are complex, and sometimes we need to rethink the entirety of the software development user-centered process.
There are deeper foundational issues of interoperability, having standard data models, having clear interfaces between, for example, the public sector and the private sector. And we want to move away from what can government do to what should government do, which is a more interesting question. And ultimately, the way you answered that question, I think, is based on outcomes. What produces a better outcome for people? an important part of how we're approaching this problem is it's not just about the technology and design. We want to be a type of corporation, a public benefit corporation, that makes the market, that the government contracting market that government has to work with, a much more competitive, more liquid market.
Yes, the government marketplace. It wouldn't be the Public Impact Podcast if we didn't talk a little bit about procurement. So I had to ask Rohan, what challenges does the procurement system create for small tech-based or creative companies that are trying to do business with the government?
It makes it difficult for lean companies that are primarily focused on creative endeavors, software, design, that don't have big arms in their business to sort of deal with the procurement process. I can certainly see why the process is opaque and scares off companies that are concentrating on delivering good work and not don't want to take, you know, 9 months, 12 months to figure out how to actually get to the work.
And Rohan did note that the cavalry of procurement reform is certainly mounted up and riding, and they've been riding for quite a while. Fortunately, there's been some progress. As Rohan says, we're moving in the right direction.
We hope that a lot of these procurement reform initiatives continue to try to move in the right direction, which is get away from paper-based responses, words that I think can be, in my opinion, sort of endlessly changed to, you know, say whatever you want to say or just speak to a particular capability. I think if we can get away from that towards how do you test what you're buying? How do you test the quality of the creative team that you're hiring? If we can get closer to that situation while still protecting, you know, government and a private entity from risk on both sides, then that's a healthier place to be and hopefully leads to better outcomes.
We went deeper into this question about procurement as a barrier, and I asked him to describe a little bit more about the challenge for companies like his in dealing with the public sector government marketplace.
Yeah, I would love to see shorter documents, more expression of needs and not necessarily specific solutions. The creative community is great at being able to give government options of doing things, and if we were closer to you know the underlying need and not kind of handcuffed into a particular way of doing things. I think one of the things that we are most expert at is not just being creative about how we develop software or our designs, but how creative we can get in being able to, as I said earlier, find the seam for picking apart a large problem. So we can sit down you know, we always begin with just a conversation. We like to understand what is the state of the world as you see it? And whether it's, you know, there's a legacy technology that's in place, there's a legacy architecture, complexity, there's whatever the problem actually is, we have always managed to find interesting ways to kind of work, keep the important parts, you know, not throw away important existing investments or important existing things that just can't be thrown away, but still manage to kind of move things in the right direction. An analogy I kind of use is like government sometimes has this problem of there's a light bulb on the ceiling and you have to somehow replace that light without the light ever going off. Like these things, you can't turn the light off, but you have to replace the light.
So there you have it. The process of radically reimagining most critical user-facing government digital services is basically like changing a light bulb without letting the light go off. I want to say thanks very much to Rohan Bobe for being on our show and for telling the story about Marketplace Light and what he's currently doing with Nava. The Public Impact Podcast is myself, Frank McNally, our executive producer, Jonathan Messenger, the founder of Public Spend Forum, Raj Sharma, our special advisor, Shelley Kapoor Collins, and you, our listeners. And if you like what you heard today, we have a lot more where this came from. Our new community portal just launched this month. We're super excited about it. You can find it at community.publicspendforum.net. That's the open global community for all professionals, community.publicspendforum.net. Join us there, and we'll see you next time on the Public Impact Podcast. And I almost forgot to mention, the soundtrack for today's episode comes from a band called Polyrhythmics and their album Octagon, which they were kind enough to post on the Free Music Archive.